Hi, this is Sasha Stone with AwardsDaily.com's podcast, All This and the Oscars Too. For this episode, it's solo. It's just me reporting from the Telluride Film Festival, the 44th annual Telluride Film Festival. I drove up with my friend Michael, who's my old friend from 30 years ago. We used to work at a video store together. He was my manager, actually. A video store, yes. Before Blockbuster. That's how old I am. Actually, before there were any Blockbuster videos. And then poor Blockbuster went out of business. And then eventually video stores mostly went out of business. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, except that we've been friends ever since. And he came with me to Telluride since my daughter is now off in college. And it's more fun to drive with someone else. So we usually drive up to Flagstaff, Arizona, spend the night at a motel, and then head on up to Telluride the next day. It was a beautiful weekend. It was unusually warm. It rained only one day. But sometimes in Telluride it rains all 4 days. But this time it didn't. It just rained one day, and it was very, very hot. While I was gone, there was a fire in Burbank. There was a horrible hurricane in Houston. And all of the usual political news churned on the internet, and it was so nice to be away from it. It really is like a whirlpool. It just sucks you in and makes you angry all day long, and so it's better to just step away if you can. And we have kind of a sort of a running tally or record, if you will, of Telluride Film Festival. The Venice and Telluride Film Festivals often produce the Best Picture winner, or they have, really, for quite a while now. So it was like last year, the year before that. The Oscar Best Picture winner seems to come nowadays with the preferential ballot in place. Comes from, it's seen early. And I think why that matters is that I think the old model of picking an Oscar winner was, save your best Oscar movie to the end of the year, release it at the end of the year, make sure it's the last movie that people see and the public sees. This is like, let's say, going back pre-2003. This is the old way of doing the Oscars, where they would roll out Oscar movies, and everybody knew them to be movies that came out at the end of the year, right? So that was when I started covering the Oscars, which I started in about 1999, started my website. And back then, the Oscars were held in March, so there was more time at the end of the year to gather a consensus of what films were going to be the winners. And sometimes movies like Shakespeare in Love could come along and pull a last-minute upset. Because there was enough time for that to happen. And voters voted on five movies. They picked five and they voted on five. And that meant that if a whole bunch of people are surging for Shakespeare in Love at the last minute, they're going to vote for it. But the preferential ballot takes that out. You can no longer really surge a winner. Well, I suppose it's possible if there's one movie that everybody really loves as opposed to a lot of movies everybody really loves. The way it's worked out recently is that there isn't one movie. There's like four movies that people really like and they're divided up. So they count the ballots for the first round. And if there isn't any clear winner, meaning one film gets 50% plus of the votes, that triggers a recount. And once they recount, they start pulling off the number ones of the people who didn't pick that top film. And then so then their number two counts or their number three counts or their number four. And before long, all the piles, you know, you get down to two movies and then you get down to a winner. So what that means is that in a recount situation, surges don't really work. What it favors are the movies that people really love, but also really like, and that nobody really hates. So that when you're doing your recount, if people, let's say last year, for instance, when I did nobody really knew that Moonlight was going to win, but I did a Facebook poll. I thought at the time that that there was a chance that La La Land wasn't going to win because it didn't get a SAG Ensemble nomination. And I know people think that's crazy because it didn't have a big cast or whatever. It still makes a difference because actors are the biggest branch in the Academy, and that was a movie about actors, so why didn't they choose the movie? It should have just been one of their five if they loved it that much. But it wasn't. So I always thought, okay, it's ripe for an upset, but I thought maybe it would be Hidden Figures. So I did a poll, and I wanted to see where people, how people ranked the movies that they liked. And what I found was that a lot of the people who are really loud and supportive of movies tended to like, let's say, Hidden Figures. But when you did a poll and people who don't really talk about movies that much put down their choices, a different picture emerged. And what it was for people basically divided up. Some liked Arrival, some liked Manchester by the Sea, some liked Moonlight, some liked La La Land. A lot liked La La Land, a lot liked Moonlight. They were probably the top two, I would say. But three and four would be Manchester and Arrival, right? Hidden Figures was also a big one, and Fences was in there too. So you had three African-American Best Picture nominees with you know, full black casts, and two of them were directed by black directors. So you have to figure that anybody who's going to put Fences as number one or Hidden Figures as number one might be inclined to put Moonlight as number two if they're wanting to support or they really like and identify with and or just really like these movies. Maybe it sounds stereotypical or like a generalization to put them in the same category, but I did find that when I did my poll, that's kind of how it worked out. But Moonlight benefited across the board because it had its number ones because a lot of people loved it. If it wasn't number one, it was often number two. And for people who didn't pick La La Land or Moonlight, they would rank them. Moonlight would always be ahead of La La Land. And that is what we call frontrunner's curse. Frontrunner's curse is the second you get labeled a frontrunner, you get a target on your back. Because everybody knows you're the one that's supposed to win Best Picture, right? So if they don't put you as number one, then they're saying, I don't like that choice. Because I know it's going to win Best Picture, right? So if I don't like that choice, it's not going to be my number one. It's probably not going to be my number two. I liked Moonlight better. That's going to be ahead of it, right? So anyway, no matter how many different ways I did the poll, Moonlight kept coming out ahead. So that's how I was able to switch my prediction at the last minute to Moonlight. So anyway, bottom line is that when a film comes out early in festival season, like last year's Moonlight, it gives people time for it to settle in. Since the Oscars are not held in March, they're held in February, everything is in a kind of time crunch. There are a lot of movies, and the movies that come out late, they kind of bubble up, they get really, really popular, and then all of a sudden there's a backlash, like The Revenant had. So once there's kind of like a backlash, you know, there's not really time to recover from that because the Oscar ballots are due immediately. So the movies that came out earlier that people have had time to really think about tend to stick around, you know, and have staying power. Sort of like The Girl Next Door, I think of it. You know, it's somebody that's there, reliable, people like and nobody hates. That was sort of Spotlight. And the more they think about it, the more they like this movie, you know, because there isn't really time for any sort of backlash to build because it's already, if there was one, it's already been built up and gone away. And all that's left is how people, like, for instance, Zero Dark Thirty. Remember Zero Dark 30's controversy that did not have time. They did not have time to recover. It was total mass hysteria on that. So nowadays, people think of Zero Dark 30 as a very good movie. They don't even remember the backlash. But an award season, when you're voting, it makes all the difference timing-wise. So that's why I think the preferential ballot was put in place in 2009. Ever since then, every single Best Picture winner has played at Telluride. Seriously, no joke. So people keep wondering, is this the year that the streak will be broken? It might be, you know. I saw quite a few films that I thought could win. I think Darkest Hour could win, the Winston Churchill movie. I think that Battle of the Sexes can win, the Billie Jean King movie. I think The Shape of Water Guillermo del Toro's amazing love story could also win. And I think Dunkirk could win, which already came out. So there's plenty more movies to see, of course. And it's too early to make any sort of calls. But it will be interesting to see how this year shapes up in terms of what movies stayed with people and what movies didn't. Anyway, what I decided to do was I wanted to record a few interviews with people that I saw at the Telluride Film Festival. And sometimes I just turned on my recorder so you could hear the sounds of Telluride. So I hope you enjoy the compilation I put together. Here at the Palm Theater, about to see the Angelina Jolie. First it came from my father, followed by a Q&A. It's by far the most crowded screening that I've seen here. The celebrities always bring out the crowds. Many people woke up very early, got their coffee, sitting down. As they navigate through the films, way too many to see at the same time here. People are really buzzing about Darkest Hour. They're buzzing about Lady Bird, which sounds like a really great movie I'll be seeing later today.
Are those two taken?
This one is, and that one is.
So this one I sent.
Sitting here with Mark Johnson from Award Circuit, who is going to the snack bar to get tea. You know, you get coffee, you get tea. I got coffee, which has spilled all over everything. And I have a peach wedged somewhere in my backpack, which will probably disintegrate and put peach juice and flesh all over all of my electronics. So there's always that. Telluride Film Festival has done a good job this year bringing in female directors. Angelina Jolie is one of them, and obviously Greta Gerwig, who wrote and directed Lady Bird, is another.
Time at Telluride. It's so wonderful. Everybody feels so close. And I'm so happy to bring this film here because I think this film is, it's an important film. It's important to me because it's my son's country and it's part of my family. But it's important to me also because of the experience I had and learning about this this extraordinary time in history where so many people felt so alone. And tonight, today. You're with them, you're sharing this with them, and their voices are heard. And I'm very grateful. And I have a bit more to say, but I'd like to bring them up because it's really more about them than me. My dear friend, and this is not just a movie, this is her life. And she's my hero, and she's a brilliant woman. Luong Ong, get out of here.
Okay, so I'm here at the Telluride Film Festival with Chris Patterson, and we're just doing a quick backup recording. They're my two, Chris and my, I'll have to fill this in all later. So.
That's fine.
Yeah, so just quickly tell me about the class that you teach and then meeting Guillermo del Toro last night. I just want to get a quick bit just in case I missed it.
Oh, it was an amazing experience. As a high school art teacher in a community where we have a great many refugees, immigrants, undocumented kids, I use Guillermo del Toro's story, his films, his illustrations, his books. I mean, they're almost like Da Vinci's books when you really start looking at what he's created. It's part of my curriculum, and the kids respond to it, love it. A lot of my South American kids, they've grown up knowing who del Toro is.
Wow.
And so he's just an important factor in being able to reach and work with my kids. And so I was thrilled last night to actually get to meet him. And, you know, sometimes you meet a celebrity or someone you've built up so much and you walk away disappointed. And in this case, it was beyond my expectations. He was warm. He was a hugger. He kissed me. He remembered me later. I had lugged around an enormous book, his Cabinet of Curiosities book. and just sheepishly, because I'm not an autograph hand, but I certainly will stalk someone. But I presented it to him, and he was just gracious to stop everything and sign it for me. And I noticed later that he even drew an illustration inside the cover of the book. So I'm taking that back to my kids, and we'll just all, you know, pant and pass out together.
So what a wonderful story. I mean, that, I just can't believe it. I know you had wanted to meet him, and so, and you carried around that book just on the off chance that you would. So he showed up at the Fox Searchlight party and kind of hosted the whole thing.
He was very much the host of the event. Graciously greeting everybody. His stamina, I mean, we were fading, and he was still going strong.
Wow. And then just really quickly, you really liked, what movies have you liked so far? What are your two top two?
You know, I honestly have loved Wonderstruck, even though, you know, I think a lot of people around us did not so much, but I've loved the books by Selznick. Of course, he's an illustrator in the graphic novel approach he takes. And I like the fairy tale aspect of it a great deal. So I really, really, I enjoyed that one a lot. I love the Greta Gerwig because I think she's adorable in many ways. She almost has that Gilda Radner kind of just off-center a little bit, but a charm and vulnerability, and I thought that permeated the movie.
And you said that you thought it was kind of like a Juno, right?
It had that because of the aspects of it being high school.
Yeah.
That focused on a young girl in high school who was very much the misfit, the typical misfit that you see in a lot of these films. And I adore, because we do so much theater, I adore the fact that they were doing a high school theater in the middle of it, and I thought it was incredibly authentic, and I could relate.
Yeah.
I was that kid. I teach those kids.
That's funny. All right, darling, we better get back in line, but it's okay. So nice to see you, and I'm sorry I'm such a lame person that I didn't get that recording.
No. Take care.
Have a good one. I'll see you around.
If I didn't have two parents who talked,
it was Joseph.
He may have not been able to get it.
That's good too.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
Can I cut this one?
You won't believe this, but I think I might have not been recording at the time.
Let's just go reenact it all, word for word.
I did get Chris a little bit. I interviewed her, but I just have to double check that I'm actually recording, because it doesn't sound like I am. And so it's just typical that I would blow that whole thing. It was such a good interview. It was so good. All right. Now I have to say my menopause jokes again.
We'll line them up.
Or zip them up.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, now we're going in.
Are they moving us?
But quickly, top three favorite movies.
In the middle of the festival? Oh, I'm not done yet.
So far, you like
Darkest Hour. I like Lady Bird. I'll tell you, I really like yesterday. I didn't mention this when we were talking earlier. I also liked Lean on Pete quite a bit.
And that surprised me.
It's a racehorse story, sort of. Charlie Plummer, who's the young lead in that, and really does carry the movie, and is exceptionally good.
Mm.
I mean, he's outstanding. I mean, he's a real find. So I kind of went in with limited expectations, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. It's really well done. So that may be the third one.
Yeah, we were just talking about how an Oscar winner is usually the movie that people can't hate.
Right, right.
And so I think Battle of the Sexes might be that movie.
And you've seen that already.
I saw it. I loved it.
I'm seeing that later this afternoon.
It's great. Tell me about your predictions. Michael runs the Michael's Telluride blog, and he does predictions every year. How did they turn out this year?
Well, you know, when I first started it, it really was strictly a guessing game, and I thought if a guy really worked hard, you might be able to dig up enough clues about how it works here, and you might be able to figure out some of this stuff. And then when Toronto, 3 or 4 years ago, decided that they changed the way they address labeling their films in terms of status, that that led everybody else in the game to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So for up until they make their announcement or their starting announcements in like July, I think, it's still a guessing game, but once they start announcing, if you pay attention to all of that, whether it's a North American premiere or a Canadian premiere or whatever, and because now New York does that too, and London does that too, and Venice does that too, you can sort of backtrack and figure out. It's much less a guessing game now than it used to be, and much more of a, if you just pay attention and can read what those things mean.
So that means that it was more accurate this time because you were able to sort of do
absolutely.
The math
that's
and cross
been,
out.
That's true. That's been true the last 2 or 3 years.
No kidding. So basically, if it's a North American premiere, you know.
If it's in Toronto, it's a North American premiere or a world premiere. It's not going to play here. In Toronto's case, then if they label it an international premiere or a Canadian premiere, then you can backtrack from this. A really good example is Call Me By Your Name, which played Sundance, and Toronto labeled it a Canadian premiere. And there were some people that immediately jumped to the conclusion that that meant that it would be here, but they discounted that it had already played at Sundance.
Right.
So even in the case of when you see a Canadian premiere, you've still got to pay attention to whether it has played someplace else in North America. So there, you know, if you know the tricks about what the language means.
So it's either Sundance or it's Telluride. So if it says North American premiere, then you know there's a chance it could have played here. Oh,
right.
Are we in North America?
We are. Yeah. North American premiere means it will not.
Oh, okay. Okay. North American premiere means it's somewhere on this North American continent.
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you got them all right then.
Were there any surprises? I missed by one this year. There was a film that I can't remember which one. It was New York or Toronto, labeled in a certain way that it was New York, that I thought, well, that means it's going to be here, and it wound up not being here. So I was 24 out of the 25 I put out.
That's amazing. Wow. So, you know, Michael's Telluride blog, go to it if you want to know what movies are going to play.
And then you know, too, now that when we get done with this, then for the rest of the year I follow you guys that play the Oscar game. Like, that becomes the obsession for the other half of the year to see what happens to the films that come out of here.
Right. And usually we're always talking about the streak because so far...
Yeah, the streak is amazing.
The Telluride streak goes all the way back to...
You go back to, what is it?
I mean, what...
Like 08 and Slumdog, and then...
Slumdog and...
09 was
Hurt Locker,
and then from that point on, I don't think the Best Picture winner has played this festival.
Yeah. So people are watching and waiting to see if the Telluride streak is broken this year.
You know, and I don't think the Telluride, the hierarchy really cares. I don't think that's their aim at all.
I think they just have good taste and they pick good movies, and they're the Academy demographic.
I agree.
More than the other festivals.
I think this little microcosm of people that pony up the money to come here is a very good representation of how the Academy will react.
Absolutely, 100%. And the people even who live here, because, you know, it's hard to live in Telluride.
Yes.
You got to have money.
You got to have a lot of money.
But, and a lot of movie people. Okay, we have to cut our interview short.
Can you stop me and stand, please? Let me know. I need your ticket, please.
Listening to Herzog. You need your ticket? Listening to Herzog and Bale was the ultimate moment.
All right, we're signing off with my friend, my very good friend, Michael Patterson, and we already heard from Chris. Michael had put up a thing on his blog for Guillermo del Toro to meet Chris, and it was such a sweet plea, and I wrote about it a little bit, but we don't know if it ever got to Guillermo del Toro. Maybe it did.
Don't know.
Maybe it did.
But the dream was fulfilled, so.
It was such a sweet thing to do. You guys are like my, if I could just be it in another life, I would be you, too.
Well,
you have the best life.
Thanks. Good morning.
So this is our last, probably our last dispatch for the Telluride Film Festival here with Mark Johnson. Kenny Miles has just showed up.
Hello, everyone.
He's our very old friend. He always comes to the Telluride Film Festival, and he came down just to say hi. So we're really happy he's here. He's going to the picnic, which it might rain. Does it look like it's going to rain?
It could rain. It's Colorado, after all.
Colorado. So yeah. What have you seen that you liked?
The Darkest Hour was tremendous. Gary Oldman was incredible. Had exquisite production design. Really liked, what else? The Writer was terrific as well. I liked that. It was really good for the Telluride. Oh, and then Hostels as well was pretty outstanding.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
What about Shape of Water?
Yes, that was tremendous as well. There are just so many great movies here. Yeah, but those other ones came to mind.
And Lady Bird?
Oh, yeah. Of course, Greta Gerwig and A24.
Yeah.
The perfect combo.
And then what about Battle of the Sexes?
I didn't see that yet. I have a friend who is at the U.S. Open and is obsessed with tennis, and she always gets kind of frustrated how I see movies without her at film festivals. So I promised her I would see that one with her.
Oh, okay.
And it's been a hard promise to keep, but I think I could hold out.
So what do you think of this idea that this isn't a great Telluride? What do you think about that?
I don't know how I feel about that. I think, after, I guess, Moonlight and La La Land last year, I mean, you know, that was a pretty big deal here, so I'm not too sure. Like, I don't think so. I mean, I love all the films here that I see, you know, the people and the atmosphere. I don't think there's ever really such a thing as a bad Telluride.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel. Like we were saying, like, you can't really judge every Telluride by last year's.
Yeah, that's not a fair comparison.
Because it was an exceptional year.
Yeah, for sure.
And you don't see years like that. No. Is this us saying goodbye now? Because we're going that
way. Oh, yeah, I have to go the other way. But yeah, this is very random and impromptu.
I know.
Okay.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my.
In the movie, I found that there were different points where you dipped in and out of this idea of concept of God, and mm-hmm. when, you know, at the end where he says, you know, you really are a God, and this is a guy who believes in the Christian God, as remade in the image of a white American male, right?
Yeah. Well,
so was that deliberate? I mean, were you?
Well, I was a Catholic once, a long, long time ago, but then. Masturbation saved me. I went, if this is a sin, I'm in. You know? But the thing is, it's still a fish, right? So many Christians would agree that the fish is okay. But no, it's about to me, the other thing that love does is love is genuinely divine. I mean it, I know it sounds really corny, but it is. I mean, when you experience it heals everything, and everything becomes superfluous. When you're in love and you have $20 in the bank, is you're super rich, you know. When you are poor and you have 10 billion in the bank, you are incredibly unhappy. There's a saying I love that is, there was a man so poor that the only thing he could have is money. You know, and I think this guy is so absolutely bankrupt, you know, and then he understands the dimension. It's not about a Christian God or a pagan God or whatever, you know, it's about him understanding the dimension. This is a guy that thinks the whole time, I'm in the top of the food chain. In the middle, he goes, I'm not in the top of the food chain. He's trying to fight his claw his way back to the top of the food chain, and then he goes, holy shit, the top of the food chain is cosmically so small. And that happens to most of us, that happens with death. Like most of us live our lives for the last 3 minutes. And the last 3 minutes when you have no more illusions, and you go, this is who I am, this is what I did, you're no longer anything, but you're gonna go out. And in those 3 minutes, you know, that's why a lot of people, they have the most horrible look of panic. And others are serene. So I think this guy has the most horrible moment where he goes, goodbye.
That's beautiful, and I also you know, I don't know if it's the same for men, but for women, water is a very sensual element. And I know it's specifically to women, I don't know, but you captured that so beautifully.
For men, anything is sensual. Mayonnaise, chocolate, arriving late, arriving early. It's pretty fucking easy. But it is incredible. I mean, I kids dreamt of flying. All of my life I've dreamt that I breathe on the water. All of my life. So her dreams are my dreams. I dream I float, which I do float.
Guillermo.
Yes.
Muchísimas gracias.
De nada.
Estoy muy honrado. But are you ever going to make a movie in Spanish again?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, you don't plan them. It's not like I have a master plan. It's whatever the fuck happens. You know, I've written 24 screenplays. I've done 10 movies. That means there are 14 movies that haven't happened the way I thought. So,
but
120%.
In Spanish or English?
That was Guillermo del Toro on his impromptu Q&A, which he did after his screening of The Shape of Water. They didn't have enough time in the theater, so he met everybody outside and he sat down on the steps of a high school. Actually, it used to be the high school. I think now it's the elementary school. And that was my question that I got to ask him. And that closes out our podcast for Telluride. Unfortunately, even though I spent almost every day with Mark Johnson, our interviews, which we did about three of them, did not get recorded because I stupidly forgot to hit record twice, which is what you have to do on this machine. So hopefully Mark Johnson will be talking with him next week, and we'll get all the scoop and the info about his experiences, and maybe we'll try to recreate some of our conversations that we had. But I apologize for being such a screw-up on every possible level. But I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you next week, everybody. Have a good night. Dancing.